Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 13th chapter, verses 14 to 26. Verse 14. Tangstam vipanam sahitatatatra vihaya jatam parekhiya sartha avartate dhyapina kashchiratra virathana param upaiti yogam. My dear king, on the forest path of material life, first a person is bereft of his father and mother, and after their death he becomes attached to his newly born children. In this way he wanders on the path of material progress and is eventually embarrassed. Nonetheless, no one knows how to get out of this, even up to the moment of death. So who remembers something from Virajan Prabhu's class? Adamana, Krishna? Okay, if you find your shelter in material things, you get suffering and frustration. Anything else that you remember from Virajan Prabhu's class? Yes, Vanamali?
It's the backbite, even though in spiritual circles they have this.
Even in spiritual circles there is backbiting, biting the back.
Mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes. Mosquitoes. Anything else? Yes. If money is the main thing, is that what you... If money is the main thing, the center of the relationship, then relationship will be spoiled. It will not last. Okay? So, how... Another point from yesterday... Is this... I wonder. This material world is like a dream. Actually, that's not yesterday's class. That's a few classes before. Okay, so we won't talk about that. But... At the beginning of the 12th chapter, Rahugana couldn't understand all the instructions of Jatabharata, so he wants it repeated and explained more simply. So now Jatabharata is talking about the forest of enjoyment, a very long analogy, and again it will be explained in the 14th chapter, how the living entity wanders from one tree to the next tree, like a monkey. Or else he's a merchant going to the forest, captivated by the modes. So the six plunderers, tigers and jackals, the senses, the wife and the children, mosquitoes, undesirable association, especially when you go to work in the outside world, then you get a lot of mosquito bites from people. There's the imaginary palace, your wonderful home, and there's the fleeting ghost, which is gold. So then there is a whirlwind. What is the whirlwind? Yes, the attractive wife. And crickets. Who are the crickets? Yes, Maharaj.
Crickets are noise from other people.
Yes? Specifically?
Backbiting.
Envious backbiting of your relatives and close persons. Persons who are close to you. Because the cricket sound, it's very, very loud. It's a loud sound. Mosquitoes, they don't make such a big sound. They just get you. But the crickets, they make the sound. And the crickets, they don't bite. They just make the sound. Very bad sound. Owls. Who are the owls? Huh? Government men. Owls are your enemies. Could be government men, yes. Fruitless tree. So you have all these problems, then you go to take shelter of a fruitless tree. A tree that has no fruit. Friend who is?
Not helping.
Not helping. Okay? Sinful people. Sinful people who take shelter. These are the fruitless trees. And what is... So then you're trying to take shelter of the fruitless tree because you're going after the mirage. So what is the mirage? Yes, material enjoyment is a mirage. So then you're feeling the burning heat of household life. And you jump into a shallow river trying to get relief from the heat. So who is the shallow river? Jumping into the shallow river, you know?
Friends.
Friends? What kind of friends? Doesn't sound like friends. Shallow river. No, not yet. The shallow river is begging from uncharitable people. You go to beg money, but they don't want to give. So you're trying to get relief from the heat, but instead you're just jumping in a shallow river. You only break your bones. So sometimes plundered, sometimes you get little happiness, and then you're in your, you got your nice wife, you got your children, and then you start climbing a mountain. So what is this mountain? Mountain of thorns. You're climbing the mountain, you get pricked by thorns all along the way. If it's not in your feet, it's in your arms or your legs. So what is this mountain? Social life, position, all the ceremonies, marrying your daughter in India, it's a really big thing. Trying to get your daughter married. Because the father of the girl has to pay all the bills for the marriage, including the dowry. So this is a heavy, this is a mountain of thorns, for, especially for Indian people. Then, okay, let's flip the flip chart, Guru Sivananda. You can just flip it. Then you get swallowed by a python on the path. So, and bitten by snakes. What is the python? And this sleep. Python of sleep. And the snakes. The Prabhupada says, you get bitten by so many snakes when you're sleeping. Who are these snakes? Did Parijan Prabhu tell you? I also wonder. Who are these snakes who bite you when you're sleeping? Okay. And then you get stung by bees. You try to get a little honey, a little enjoyment, and you get stung by the bees. So what is the honey? Licit sex life. Licit sex. And then because it's illicit, then everybody gets on your case. So now we're in verse 14. So we won't do that. Verse 14, first you're bereft of your father and mother, then you become attached to the children. So Srila Prabhupada says in purport, in this material world, family life is an institution of sex. Through sex, the father and mother beget children, and children get married and go down the same path of sexual life. So Srila Prabhupada, there's a famous story of Srila Prabhupada where one Indian man came to meet him. And he brought his family members, and he was introducing, this is my wife, this is my son, this is my son's wife, this is the brother, this is the grandson, this is the granddaughter. And after he left the room, Prabhupada turned to the devotees and said, this is my sex life. So this is the story of this material world. And Prabhupada would often say that I'm trying to save these young people, actually the flower of your country, America, the young people were joining this movement. And the American mothers and fathers, they were unhappy because then the children were deprived of all the wonderful things in life, like sex life and intoxication and meat eating and gambling. So they didn't understand. Verse 15, there were and are many political and social heroes who have conquered enemies of equal power. Yet due to their ignorance and believing that the land is theirs, they fight one another and lay down their lives in battle. They are not able to take up the spiritual path accepted by those in the renounced order. Although they are big heroes and political leaders, they cannot take to the path of spiritual realization. Purport. Big political leaders might be able to conquer equally powerful political enemies, but unfortunately, they cannot subdue their strong senses, the enemies that always accompany them. Not being able to conquer these nearby enemies, they simply try to conquer other enemies, and ultimately they die in the struggle for existence. They do not take to the path of spiritualization or become sannyasis. Sometimes these big leaders take up the guise of a sannyasi, call themselves mahatmas, but their only business is conquering their political enemies. Because they spoil their lives with the illusion of this is my land and this is my family, they cannot progress spiritually and attain liberation from the clutches of Maya. So while I was studying in Mayapur, I was studying Bhagavatam to prepare for these classes, it came in the news that one of the Sankaracharyas of the Mats was accused of murder. So it's very, nowadays it's very difficult to find a real saintly leader. Parijan Prabhu tells a story about Perth, Australia. He says, when the leaders die, they put a plaque next to a tree with their name on it. So they name a tree, or they put it, the name of these famous people, they put it on the tree, or maybe they name a street after him, or they put a statue there. But Burijan says, what is the use to be a dead hero? You're dead. So people may admire your statue, but what is the use for the soul? And Prabhupada's favorite saying was Napoleon, his favorite hero. When he would go to Paris, he would see Napoleon's statue. So there was a saying before that France is Napoleon, and Napoleon is France. So Prabhupada said, France is here, but where is Napoleon? And so they're thinking they're eternal. They're trying to make themselves eternal in one sense, but actually they can't do it. So there's a verse in Bhagavatam, I believe, yes, that says something about people who think their land is worshipable. Does anybody know that verse, or even that section? Boma Ijadi, yes, Boma Ijadi, 10th canto, 84th, chapter 13th verse. Boma Ijadi, yasyatma buddhi kunape chitatuke, swadhi kalata dishu boma ijadi. So who are these people? Who are they called? Sa eva gokara, gokara, cows and asses. So Prabhupada, he was quoting, he visited Russia, and actually this lecture was in 66, he hadn't even visited Russia yet. He said, the Russian philosophy, they have no meaning for God, but they have every meaning for their land, sacrifice for the land, anything for the land of Russia. And so this is Saeva Gokara. And another story Prabhupada would often give as an example was the Hindu-Muslim riots in Calcutta. That whole day, the Hindus and Muslims would fight over the land, and then they would all kill each other. And then in the morning, the next day, the municipal sweepers would have to take all the heaps of dead bodies and throw them away. And at that time, Prabhupada says, okay, you ask them, whose land is it? Whose land? So that's the story of everyone's life. We're all going to die, and we're going to leave the land, and actually it's Krishna's land. No one can claim it for their own. But they fight. They think the land is theirs, but they can't conquer the senses. So, verse 16, sometimes living entity in the forest of material existence takes shelter of creepers and desires to hear the chirping of the birds in those creepers. Being afraid of roaring lions in the forest, he makes friends with cranes, herons, and vultures. Who are the creepers? The wife. And the birds? Children? Sweet children. And the roaring lions? Death. The cranes, herons, and vultures? False gurus, bogus gurus, incarnations, and swamis. So about three lines down, Prabhupada says, within the creepers, there are many chirping birds. This indicates he wants to satisfy himself by hearing the sweet voice of his wife. In old age, however, he sometimes becomes afraid of imminent death, which is compared to a roaring lion. So even if you have a happy household life, which I think there was a purport previously said 99.9% of people are not happy in household life, even if you do have a happy household life and you have a sweet, sweet voice of your wife, still old age will come and death will come and tear you apart. So death is compared to a roaring lion. So now the lion's roaring and after you, to save himself from the lion's attack, he takes shelter of some bogus swamis, yogis, incarnations, pretenders, and cheaters. So where's the real shelter in this bewildering maze of herons, cranes, and vultures? How can we find the real shelter? What can we compare the real guru to? Here we have cranes, herons, and vultures. So what do we compare the real guru? Which animal or bird or eagle? Swan, Paramahans. So there's in the beginning of Bhagavatam, the crows and the swans. We get, huh? Karuna Sindhu, ocean of mercy. Wow, okay. Compare him to an ocean. Karuna Sindhu, Paramahans. Yes, rain cloud of mercy. So this is the real one. So I have something here by Sridhar Swami from Krishna book. He says, "My dear Lord, I'm a living entity perpetually disturbed by conditions, material existence. I have been cracked to pieces by the smashing wheel of material existence. And because of my various sinful activities while existing in this material world, I'm burning in the blazing fire of material reactions. Somehow or other, my dear Lord, I've come to take shelter under your lotus feet. Please accept me. Give me protection." So which prayer of Shikshastakam is similar to, little similar? Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram patitamman. So this is how we must pray. Anybody experienced the blazing fire of material life? I think not everybody has, but most people have experienced this blazing fire. So verse 17, "Being cheated by them, the living entity in the forest of material world tries to give up association of these so-called yogi swamis and incarnations and come to the association of real devotees. But due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master or advanced devotees. Therefore, he gives up their company and again returns to association of monkeys who are simply interested in sense gratification and women. He derives satisfaction by associating with sense gratifiers, enjoying sex and intoxication. In this way, he spoils his life simply indulging in sex and intoxication. Looking into the faces of other sense gratifiers, he becomes forgetful and thus approaches death." So do we have friends like this who have become devotees and then left? Yes? Anybody has an example? Some friend. Why do they leave? Why do they come to Krishna consciousness and then leave? What is the reason they give?
Insincerity.
I don't think they would give that reason.
Offense.
Yes.
Once someone asked Vidyananda Maharaj this question, he said that some people experienced animal life, then they experienced human life, and they decided animal life is better.
Okay, someone once asked Sridhananda Maharaj this question, and he said, some people, they come, they have already experienced animal life, now they experience human life, and they think animal life is better. Yes. Right. So four kinds of people, Arto, Jigyasa, and Artarti. They come to Krishna consciousness, they get to what they came for, they fulfilled their material desires, and then, or they get a green card to America, they get a plane ticket to the West, and you never see them again. So, isn't it? So many people ask me, "Can you take me to America?" I said, "Well, if you pay my ticket, I don't have the money to go." Anyway, but what? I have no house. I have nothing. So what will it? They just want to go there, and they think, "Okay, now it's the promised land. It's Eden, or it's heavenly planets." And so many, they do that. They think, yes, ISKCON is very good for getting a ticket to the West, etc., etc. And then when they get it, and you don't see, or they get married to some Western girl, and then they dump her in the West. This happens so many times. So these are the problems. So Prabhupada talks about some kind of monkeys here. Who are these monkeys? Yes.
False yogis.
False yogis, yes. Why monkeys? What's the Sanskrit name?
Markat
Vairagya, yes. Markat Vairagya. So Prabhupada says in the purport, in the middle, "Those who are so-called spiritualists are compared to monkeys. Outwardly, monkeys sometimes resemble sadhus because they live naked in the forest and pick fruits. But their only desire is to keep many female monkeys and enjoy sex life. Sometimes so-called spiritualists seeking a spiritual life come to associate with Krishna-conscious devotees, but they cannot execute the regulative principles or follow the path of spiritual life. Consequently, They leave the association of devotees and go to associate with sense gratifiers who are compared to monkeys. So Brihajan Prabhu says that psychological reaction is if you come and you can't follow, then you go to another group with lower standards. You find somebody else who has standards you can follow, and then you join that group. So then you criticize the higher group and cover up the fact that you failed to make the grade in the higher group. So this is going on. These monkeys, they externally resemble sadhus, but they only want sex life. So Prabhupada says, in this age, in the name of religion, so many sinful acts are being carried on. Can someone give me some examples of New Age religions that are... Yes, Maharaj?
Lazarus or something?
Lazarus, I never heard of that. New Age group. Guru. Acha. Acha. Oh, who is this? Jagannath. Jagannath Srila.
Wow. Yeah, the original body of Jagannath.
Original.
Yeah.
Jagannath Srila. Yeah, so Lazarus, I never heard of him. Any other examples?
In Brazil. In Amazon forest, they started drinking one tea. Kind of chai that they get in the forest, and they get many hallucinations by doing this. And this became very popular now in all places in Brazil. They have in this, they call it a religion.
So they have a religion, they drink some tea from the Amazon forest, and what's the name of the tea?
They call it Santo Daime, which means, oh Lord, give me.
Oh Lord, give me. Santo Dame, oh Lord, give me. So this is one of our newest age groups in Brazil. So, oh Lord, this is a tea that you drink in Brazil.
Many devotees have been going there and because of this psychological dynamics. No? It's very difficult to have some spiritual realization by chanting, so I go there, I drink the tea and then I see God.
So you're losing devotees to the tea in Brazil, because they don't. You're not losing devotees.
Yes,
you're losing.
Some who try and cannot follow.
Oh, those who try and cannot follow, then they go to the tea.
Yes.
Acha.
Very easily, you can see God just by doing.
So you can see God very easily. What does God look like in the? Okay. Anyway, so they see God very easily by drinking the tea. So this is quite interesting. Way of God. Of course, we had that idea also before we found Prabhupada, that you could find self-realization by drugs. Many Westerners had that idea. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was talking to Raghunath Das Goswami, he said, don't be monkey, don't be market varagya. Just don't make an external show. And he said to him, for the time being, enjoy the material world in a befitting way and don't become attached. Better to do that than to become a show bottle devotee, a hypocrite devotee. So that's what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised to Raghunath Das Goswami. Market Vairagya. Falgo Vairagya. So what is our path? What is our Vairagya? Yukta Vairagya, yes. We use everything for Krishna. So there was a... Srila Prabhupada met one reporter in London. I don't have the date here, but it's from Science of Self-Realization. And the reporter was very worried. He says, what frankly worries me since the arrival in Britain some time ago of an Indian yogi who was the first guru that most people ever heard of, a lot of gurus have suddenly appeared out of nowhere. Sometimes I get the feeling not all of them are as genuine as they ought to be. Would it be right to warn people who are thinking of taking up spiritual life that they should make sure they have a genuine guru? Srila Prabhupada said yes. To search a guru is very nice, but if you want a cheap guru, if you want to be cheated, you'll find many cheating gurus. But if you're sincere, you'll find a sincere guru. Because people want everything cheaply, they are cheated. So there's one thing, Prabhupada says, distinguishes us from the other groups. You know what that one thing is, of course, besides having a genuine guru, in our practices. Yes.
Following
yes.
Abstention from sex.
Right. The four principles, all four. He said that we ask people to follow no meat eating, no gambling, no sex, illicit sex, no intoxication. But if someone else says, do whatever you like, just take my mantra, twice a day you meditate, they say, oh yes, this is very nice. So Prabhupada says they don't want to do austerity, they want to be cheated, so the cheaters come. So the reporter said to Prabhupada, what about the person who seriously wants to find spiritual life, but who happens to finish up with the wrong guru? So what would you say to that? What happens if, you know, you're the right person, you're very sincere, but you get the wrong guru? What will you say to that? Reporter, Maharaj?
If one is actually sincere, Krishna's Paramatma will send him qualified.
Yes.
And these persons were not really sincere.
Yeah. So Prabhupada said that if you just want an ordinary education, you have to devote so much time, labor, understanding. So with spiritual life, you also have to be serious. You have to research. Then he says, how is it simply by some wonderful mantra you can become God in 6 months? So who is going to believe it? You know? It's really, why do people want something like this? So then the reporter asked Prabhupada, I wondered how many people you think might have been cheated by false gurus. How many you think? Prabhupada said, practically everyone. Everyone. There is no question of counting. Everyone. And the reporter said, oh, thousands? Prabhupada said, millions. Millions have been cheated because they want to be cheated. Krishna is in your heart. He knows. He sends you a cheater. So then the reporter says, when you say that lots of people want to be cheated, do you mean lots of people want to carry on with their worldly pleasures at the same time chanting a mantra or holding a flower achieve spiritual life as well? Is this what you mean? Wanting to be cheated. Prabhupada said yes. Just like a patient thinking, I'll continue with my disease, the same time I'll become healthy. What are some other analogies for this idea? Elephant bath, okay. Another one? Yes. Okay, you're rowing the boat whole night, but you don't pull up the anchor. Another one? Yes. Yes. You're trying to light the fire at the same time you're pouring water on the fire. So this is what's going on with people in this world. This is the news of this material world. So Prabhupada said, and if people by chance become interested, then he wants something immediate and cheap, and therefore he is cheated. So, why do people accept bogus gurus? We had a few reasons here. They want to be cheated, they want something cheap, they want something immediate. Why else do they want to accept these kind of gurus? Why do people do it? Patri?
I think they would like to stay and get the glory in the shadow of their chief glory.
They would like to?
To get their own glory.
To get their own glory. They like to have a nice self-image. People will think they're spiritualists. And yes?
It's very appropriate. Like, recently I spoke to one of such gurus.
Oh, you spoke to one of these gurus in Nepal.
He has thousands and thousands.
Thousands and thousands of followers.
But I asked his followers for 5-10 years.
Right.
Yes. No principles.
He says you don't need principles. This is a big guru in Nepal.
Some shastra is there, so they're using the same shastra but no principles, and they're giving them without even nishtha and nothing.
So what are they doing? So they get some shastra but no principles. Oh, they have katha and they concoct
7 days
katha, 20 days katha. Wow! So the big guru.
And now he got very great glory in
The big guru in Nepal, it turns out. he used to be a devotee in ISKCON Juhu. And he said, well, in ISKCON it was so difficult to become sannyasi, but now I'm a big sannyasi and I have thousands.
He didn't say that, but
no.
It was one of the reasons.
One of the reasons.
And I asked, what about your sampradaya?
What about your sampradaya?
In fact, we went to this one sadhu.
Yes.
Very honest from different Sri sampradaya.
Uh-huh.
My friend. And he asked him very boldly, because that's sadhu. He was the other Prabhupada's man. He was brought in Juhu also, but he's still in his sampradaya.
Right.
And he asked him very boldly, what is your sampradaya?
What is your sampradaya? He could not look him in the eye.
We don't need sampradaya, we connect him directly.
Oh, we don't need sampradaya.
Exactly.
So no need of sampradaya, we're connecting directly with Krishna. Actually, I was just reading, I was reading a Gurudasa's book about Srila Prabhupada. And in San Francisco, they had one of the regular people, and I think he was living in the temple as a brahmachari. His name was Brother David. He was a really good Christian. And he was following Christ at the same time living at the temple. And then after living for about a month in the temple, he left and he founded a whole movement called Children of God. It's a very popular movement in America, Children of God, Christian movement. After living in ISKCON Ashram for 1 month. And so he became also a spiritual leader of his own group. And this happens in Vrindavan too. Many people there in ISKCON, and then after, especially Vrindavan, then they leave and they make their own groups. At least since I've been here, at least two, three have been ISKCON devotees preaching, and then they leave and they become very high, elevated in their eyes. Many, many followers. So this is going on. The question maybe should not be, why do people accept bogus gurus, or why do people become bogus gurus? Why is that? So why do these people do that? So anyway, this is going on. And blind leading the blind. So I have here an interesting excerpt from Chaitanya Bhagavat. And this is in Madhya 20 of Chaitanya Bhagavat, verse 140. A fallen person is superior to a sinful hypocrite because he goes to hell alone, whereas the hypocrite takes others to hell with him. Plunderers steal people's wealth in solitary places by threatening them with weapons, whereas hypocrites steal people's wealth by bewildering them with heart-piercing words. Shudras will dress as ascetics and accept charity for their livelihood. Those who are ignorant of religious principles will occupy the seat of the acharya and teach religious principles. So this is actually a verse from Bhagavatam, quoted here, 12.3.38, that shudras will become gurus, occupy the seat of acharya. And this is from Chaitanya Bhagavat, verses 140 to 146. People go to see ascetics in good faith, but when they hear them blaspheme saintly persons, they are ruined. By hearing blasphemy of saintly persons, one's piety is exhausted. The Vedas declare that such people live in hellish conditions, birth after birth. Thieves suffer for only one lifetime, but blasphemers suffer continuously, life after life. Of the two, blasphemous sannyasi is unlimitedly more sinful than the thief. So this is, it must be an Ishopanishad something, yes? That Andam Bhavishanti. Mm-hmm. Yes. Those who mislead others go lower than ignorant people. They're worse than ignorant people who know nothing about spiritual life. Yes, Maharaj.
So they probably used to refer to those as fourth-class men, yes. Serving a fifth-class man.
Yes. And there's another thing I heard him in a lecture. He was talking about these sannyasis, and he said, they're not even first-class rascals. They're third-class rascals.
What was that, Chaitanya
Bhagavat? Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya 20, 140 to 146.
140 to 146.
Yeah, or 141, around there. This is the Chaitanya Bhagavat of Pundarik Vidyanidhi and Bhumipati. Verse 18, when the living entity becomes exactly like a monkey jumping from one branch to another, He remains in the tree of household life without any profit but sex. Thus he is kicked by his wife, just like the he-ass. Unable to gain release, he remains helplessly in that position. Sometimes he falls victim to an incurable disease, which is like falling into a mountain cave. He becomes afraid of death, which is like the elephant in the back of that cave, and he remains stranded, grasping at the twigs and branches of a creeper. So what is a mountain cave? What is a mountain cave? Disease. What is the elephant? Death. So two images of death. Elephant, lion. What's another image of death that we hear often? We heard yesterday, I think, in the class. Death is like a snake. A snake. An elephant, a lion, or a snake. This is death. So if you watch the monkeys in Vrindavan, you'll see there's no meaning. They go from one tree to the other, and they try to shake the tree just to show that they're the boss of the tree. But actually, there's no meaning to their activities. So here it says, if you're in Grihastha life, you go into the tree and you shake the tree and you make some money, and with no meaning. Why is there no meaning to the whole, to this Grihamidhi life? Grihamidhi life. Why is there no meaning? Because at the end there's the elephant of death. And if you see, what is the result of these people working hard? When I was in Moscow, then the ladies were having a hard time living in the ladies' ashram in the temple. And they were telling me, oh, sometimes, you know, we go and preach and we think, oh, they're having better time than we are. These people, they're working and they're getting money and they're enjoying, and we're working and we're living in austere conditions. And somebody asked me that question. And so what would you say if someone says that? Sometimes it does seem devotee's life is very hard. Brahmachari ashram or ladies ashram. My goodness, I lived in the ashram for 18 years in the temple. It's really austere. Sometimes no room, no lights, no roof over your head. Yeah. Huh? You have to see your life spiritually. Yes.
Because of improper following the rules and regulations, the devotee cannot experience higher taste for a long time.
Mm. No higher taste.
And it becomes envious of those who are smiling on the streets and they are saying they have everything.
Yes, so if you don't have a higher taste, then you start thinking, oh, maybe it's better if I go outside and work. Yes, Madhavendrapuri.
There are different types of intelligence.
Different types of?
Intelligence.
Those who just by hearing they practice?
And some will have to experience themselves.
Some will have to experience themselves.
And even some others, even by experience, they don't get the most.
Even by experience, they still don't learn. Yes.
So
you can choose. Just like some of our children who are born in the movement, they never experience material life. So they think, well, you know, what are we missing? We don't know until we go and see for ourselves. But if they're intelligent, then they'll learn by hearing. But otherwise, they have to go and see, well, what is this that we never experienced? What is this whole world out there, material world? Working, getting money, enjoying, living nicely. So what is actually the problem with thinking like this? I think in the Sanskrit there's two words, shreyas and priyas. That you think what is the immediate enjoyment, or you think what is long term. So the spiritualist, he thinks long term. He has a long term vision. Priyas, what is actually best? Now in this life, let me do some austerity. Let me sacrifice for the next life. Actually, everybody has to do that. They go to school. They sacrifice their youth, learning so many things so they can get a nice job and live happily, so-called. So we also sacrifice. We sacrifice. I told those ladies, I said, do you ever go to an old people's home? Do you ever see what is the end of working so hard for so much money? Do you ever see what happens to these old people? So I told them. So you want to be like that? Your family abandons you and... You know, and my mother-in-law, I went to visit her, and they keep you so up on drugs that you don't know, you can't even talk or communicate. You don't know what's going on. I saw her, she was trying to catch the butterflies that we couldn't see. She was like, oh, there's a butterfly, I got it. Oh, there's one. And then their recreation was they put all the old people in the wheelchairs in a circle, and then they give them balloons, and then they hit the balloons to each other. That was their recreation. So and they wear diapers, so I thought, wow, they're really preparing for next life. They all got diapers on, and they're playing childish games. And they don't know where they're going. They don't know what's after death. So this is the end of the materialistic life. But these people, they have cancer, or they have these diseases, and they end up in these places, in the hospital, and they're screaming, and nobody hears them. It's crying in the wilderness. Nobody hears their cries. And they're mistreated also. They're not treated nicely. They're forced to eat things they don't want to eat, just like babies. Those people, they force them, they comb their hair very roughly, mistreat them. And so it's a very, very depressing end to a life of hard work. You sacrifice for your family, your children, and then this is, of course, in India maybe it's not so bad, but in the West, this is how it is. This is actually where everybody ends up at the end of their lives, unless they get a heart attack and die immediately, which is Krishna's mercy. But otherwise, that's where they end up. So, let us go. Verse 19, 20. O killer of enemies, Maharaj Hugana, if the conditioned soul somehow or other gets out of his dangerous position, he again returns to his home to enjoy sex life, for that is the way of attachment. So the dangerous position is the elephant at the back and the mountain cave. So they get cured of their disease and they think, oh, now I can enjoy. Age of 50, age of 60, age of 70, they're still getting married again. Thus, under the spell of the Lord's material energy, he continues to loiter in the forest of material existence. He does not discover his real interest, even at the point of death. So this one devotee, he had a chronic disease, he was dying, and he was in a hospital, and he was with all these people who were also dying, and he said, what do? They do crossword puzzles, they watch TV, they try to get into the things, but actually they can't forget that death is coming for them. They can't forget where they're going. They're screaming. They're in great misery. And so this is the end of this materialistic life. My dear Hugana, you are also a victim. Now he's going to be very personal. So before it was just a story that he's telling to Maharaj Hugana, and now he's getting to the point. You are also a victim of the external energy. It's you. This story is all about you and us. Being situated on the path of attraction to material pleasure. Well, it's not devotees, of course, they've given this up. So, but this is a warning for us that don't go this path. So that you may become an equal friend to all living entities, I now advise you to give up your kingly position and the rod by which you punish criminals. Give up attraction to the sense objects and take up the sword of knowledge sharpened by devotional service. Then you are able to cut the hard knot of illusory energy and cross to the other side of the ocean of nations. So I'm going to read the Sanskrit. It's very nice. Rahuganatvam apihyatvanosya sanyastadanda kritabhuta maitva asajitatma harisevayashitam jnanasya madaya taratiparam. So give up your palanquin and give up your rod of chastisement, take up the rod of sannyas. So now he's saying give everything up and take up the sword of knowledge. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna compares the material world to a tree of illusion from which one must cut oneself free. So Srila Prabhupada in Calcutta was giving a lecture on this tree of illusion, this verse, first verse in 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And it's described that the tree is upside down. It's got its branches down and its roots up. So Prabhupada said to us, in Calcutta Temple, he said, just imagine if someone holds you by your feet and holds you upside down. Would that be a very comfortable position? So anyway, we're all in that position. We're upside down. It's the material world. We're being held upside down, and there's no relief except the sharpened sword of knowledge. So in the purport, Sri Prabhupada quotes two verses from Gita. Narupamasyeha tatopalapyate nanta nachadir nachasam patishta asattamenam suvirutamulam asangashistrena jitena chitva tata paranta parimarkitavyam yasmin gachana nipartam tibhuya tameva charyam purusham papadye yata priviti pasita kurani. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this tree with the weapon of detachment. So doing, one must seek that place from which, having once gone, one never returns, and dare surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything has begun, whom everything is abiding since time immemorial. So we heard a verse, I think it was yesterday, about the sword of knowledge. 7th canto, 15, verse 45. So what about Bhagavad Gita? Any verses about the sword of knowledge? There is a verse somewhere. Yes, Maharaj?
This is the 15th chapter.
15th? Oh, yes.
Number 3 and 4.
3 and 4, okay. I think it was what we just read. Asanga shastrena jitena chitva. I think there's another. 442 Madhavendra? Okay. Oh, we've got Bhagavad Gita first. 442?
Yes.
The sword of knowledge. Krishna's telling Arjuna the same thing. You take the sword of knowledge and cut away this ignorance, lust. 442.
Therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your
doubts
heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge.
The doubts.
Yoga of heart,
so, the doubts which have arisen in your heart should be slashed with the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Arjuna, stand and fight. So, yoga is a sword, weapon of knowledge, cutting out the doubts. What did you have, Madhavendra? Oh, that's 5, 12, 16. Okay. With the sword of knowledge, you can cut to pieces the illusory associations. So this is. Now he's giving 5, 12, 16. I have 20, so I don't know if it's 16 or 20. Is it 16? Okay. Verse 21. Now the king is going to reply. King Rahugana said, "This birth as a human being is the best of all. Even birth among the demigods in the heavenly planets is not as glorious as birth as a human being on this earth. What is the use of the exalted position of a demigod? In the heavenly planets, due to profuse material comforts, there is no possibility of associating with devotees." So what is the problem of opulence? Can we use it for Krishna? Mogashaya prasaktanam tayabharita chetasam. That in the mind of someone who is too attached to opulence and material sense gratification, the resolute determination for devotional service will not take place. This is the problem. We don't get that strong determination if we're too attached to opulence. We're attached to the opulence. So this is one problem of opulence. Okay, Brijan asked the question, how many of us would like to be demigods? Rather be demigods than living here. Actually, Brijan and I, we were discussing about the universe, and I was telling him about Satyaloka, how I read about Satyaloka, that it was such a beautiful place, and it's made of mind and intelligence, and it's always changing every second. You can't even understand. You can't really pin it down. And he says, "So, you want to go there? You're so curious." I said, "No, it's not worth it. I don't want to take another birth again." So, some people may not think that way. Somebody may think, "Well, it is, you know, I'm suffering so much. At least, you know, if I had a little relief for a while, wouldn't be such a bad idea. Sometimes even in this world you think, oh, I want to get away from it all. Let me go off to the Himalayas or to Goa or whatever. Just a little vacation. So how many of us, huh?
Vacation.
Yes. Devotees get vacations? No. Our vacation is preaching, Maharaj, right? You go and preach in Siberia. That's your vacation. Where?
Other places too.
Oh, yes.
Devachandra Maharaj invited me and he said, come to Indonesia. It's the best working vacation you can find.
Okay. Come to Indonesia. It's the best working vacation you can find.
And then you can preach to the devotees all you want and the weather is good.
Yes, when you hit old age, then these are considerations sometimes. You can preach all you want and the weather is good. Yeah, so anyway. But we have the great fortune of being human beings with the opportunity to serve Krishna. So let's see what the demigods say. We're going to hear about this in 5th canto, 19th verse. Did I finish that verse? This birth? No, I didn't read that, did I? I read 20. So let's read 21. King Ahugana said, this birth as a human being is the best of all. Even birth among the demigods and heavenly planets is not as glorious as birth as a human being on this earth. What is the use of the exalted position of a demigod? In the heavenly planets, due to profuse material comforts, there is no possibility of associating with devotees. So this is a certain level of advancement. What level of advancement from Shraddha to Prema is when you have this realization that I don't want anything in this world. Asakti, before asakti, nishta, yes. This is natanam, najanam, nasundarim, kaviram, va, jagadishikamaye. Nishta, no. Ruchi. Yeah, nishta is chanadapi sunichina, tarari vasahishina, and ruchi. Actually, you have to have a higher taste to give up the lower. Ruchi, this is a level of ruchi where we don't even want to be in the heavenly planets. We don't even want to be in the Himalayas right now where it's nice and cool. Yes? I don't know what he's saying. 118.13. Tulayama lavenapi nasargam na. Okay. So the best thing is not to be a demigod, but to get a second's association with a pure devotee. So that's what he's saying. Very good. So the demigods in 19th chapter of this canto, verse 21, they say, Yaho, Amisham kemakarisho banam pasanna esham sirutasayam mari yajan malatam nishu baratachire mukunda seva payikam spihahina. Since the human form of life is a sublime position for spiritual realization, the demigods speak, how wonderful it is for these human beings to have been born in the land of Bhartvarsh. They must have executed pious acts of austerity in the past, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself must have been pleased with them. Otherwise, how could they engage in devotional service in so many ways? We demigods can only aspire to achieve human births in Bhartvarsh, to execute devotional service. These human beings are already engaged there. So this is the view of the demigods. They would like to be born here, right now. Verse 22. It is not at all wonderful that simply by being covered by the dust of your lotus feet, one immediately attains the platform of pure devotional service to a Hoksaja, which is not available even to great demigods like Brahma. By associating with you just for a moment, I am now freed from all argument, false prestige, and lack of discrimination, which are the roots of entanglement in the material world. Now I am free from all these problems. Can you flip the flip chart to verse 22? So three roots of entanglement here, which are for the king. Roots of entanglement: Dushtarka, false arguments, and Aviveka, not being able to discriminate. Aviveka and Dushtarka. So he had his arguments. He had so many arguments with Jadabharat. And that was the root of his entanglement. and aviveka. He was not able to discriminate properly, so therefore he had to take instruction. But now he says, I am enlightened by you, and I'm very happy to give up my position as king. Verse 23. So now this verse is very, very important for all of us, because this verse you can sing if you've committed any offense to anything, any devotee, unknowingly. Namo Mahadbhyo Stunama Shishobhyo Namo Yuvabhyo Nama Avatubhyo Ye Brahmana Kamma Vatutta Linga Sharanti Tebhyo Shiva Mastirakiram. I offer my respectful obeisances unto these great personalities, Mahadbhyo, whether they walk on the earth's surface as children, Shishubhya, young boys, Yuvabhya, Avadutas, Avatubhya, or great Brahmanas, Brahmana. Even if they are hidden under different guises, I offer my respects to all of them. By their mercy, may there be good fortune in the royal dynasties that are always offending them. So that was his mistake. His palanquin carrier was a great sadhu, which he didn't know. He was a great Brahmana, a great Vaishnava, and he insulted him. So now he's trying to offer this prayer so that all of his previous offenses, maybe he might have offended someone else. And there is one book I read by one of our gurus in ISKCON. And in his book he said, I am publicly asking forgiveness for all the offenses I committed unknowingly to anyone in the past. So this is, and actually before you die, on your deathbed, a lot of devotees do that. We see people die here in Vrindavan, they say, please forgive me for my offenses. Srila Prabhupada also, he gave that example. When his godbrothers came, Prabhupada begged forgiveness for his offenses. Of course, they said, you have no offenses, you are innocent, you are sinless. So Prabhupada says in the purport, King Rahugana was very repentant, because he had forced Jatabharat to carry his palanquin. He therefore began offering prayers to all kinds of Brahmins and self-realized persons, even though they might be playing like children or hiding in some guises. So who offended a child and got the reaction that we know of? Huh? Jai Vijay offended the four children. Yes, who else? Hiranyakashipu offended Prahlad. And who else? Suruchi. Suruchi offended Dhruva. Anybody else? Anybody in ISKCON? I don't know. Anyway, so this is, you have to be very careful. Who is, we don't know who is a great devotee. Being puffed up due to their position, the royal dynasties generally offend these great personalities. Oh, the four Kumaras walked everywhere in the guise of five-year-old boys. Similarly, there are many Brahmins, knowers of Brahman, who travel the globe. Prabhupada says, isn't this interesting? He says, there are many Brahmanas who traverse the globe, either as young men, children, or avadutas. So they may be amongst us. There might be avadutas amongst us. There might be great souls, great saints, we don't know. Who is there? Being puffed up due to their position, the royal dynasties generally offend these great personalities. Therefore, King Rahugana began to offer his respectful obeisances unto them, so the offensive royal dynasties might not glide down to a hellish condition. If one offends a great personality, Supreme Personality of Godhead does not excuse one, although the great personalities themselves might not take offense. Maharaj Ambarish was offended by Durvasa, who even approached Lord Vishnu for pardon. Lord Vishnu would not grant him pardon. Therefore, he had to fall down at the lotus feet of Maharaj Ambarish, even though Maharaj Ambarish was a Kshatriya Grihastha. One should be very careful not to offend the lotus feet of Vaishnavas and Brahmins. So the problem was the king was in the mode of passion, and so he did make offense just by his nature. Verse 24. Shishukadev Goswami continued, my dear king, O son of Mother Uttara, there were some waves of dissatisfaction in the mind of Jatabharat due to his being insulted by King Rahugana, who made him carry his palanquin. But Jatabharat neglected this, and his heart again became calm and quiet like an ocean. Although King Rahugana had insulted him, he was a great Paramahansa. Being a Vaishnava, he was naturally very kind-hearted. He therefore told the king about the constitutional position of the soul. He then forgot the insult because King Rahugana pitifully begged pardon at his lotus feet. After this, he began to wander all over the earth just as before. So what are the symptoms of great personalities? Prabhupada tells us. Titikshava kurika surido sarvadehinam. He's tolerant. He's a friend of all. He does not create enemies. He has the qualities of a sadhu. So Jada Bharat is an example. Due to the material body, his senses were certainly agitated when he was insulted by King Rahugana. But later, due to the king's humble submission, Jada Bharat excused him. So it's interesting to think how a pure devotee could feel insulted, and he's supposed to be liberated. Jada Bharat was certainly a liberated soul. Still, he felt something when he... And Prabhupada said it's due to the body. Isn't that interesting? Of course, it may not be the gross body. It could be the subtle body. The subtle body is the mind. The mind gets agitated. So then, it is the duty of everyone to desiring to return to Godhead, to become submissive like King Rahugana, and beg pardon of Vaishnavas one may have offended. Vaishnavas are generally very kind-hearted. Therefore, if one immediately submits himself to the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, one is immediately cleared of offensive reactions. If one does not do so, the reactions will remain and the results will not be very palatable. So again, another warning by Śrīla Prabhupāda. Vaishnava Parād. Verse 25. After receiving lessons from the great devotee, Jadabhara, King Rahugana of the state of Salvira became completely aware of the constitutional position of the soul. He thus gave up the bodily conception completely. My dear king, whoever takes shelter of the servant of the Lord is certainly glorified because he can without difficulty give up bodily conception. Prabhupada says, Chaitanya Chaitamita, Sarasanga, Sarasanga, Sarasastikai, Lamapta Sarasanga Sarasitihuai. It is a fact that if one takes shelter of a pure devotee, one attains all perfection, even if the association is a short one. A sadhu is a pure devotee of the Lord. It has been our practical experience that the first instruction of our spiritual master infused us with Krishna consciousness, so that now we are at least on the path of Krishna consciousness and can understand the philosophy. So what was his first instruction of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati to Śrīla Prabhupāda? Prabhupāda's talking about here in this purport. And what is the first instruction? Preach in English. Okay? Prabhupāda says, as a result, there are many devotees engaged in this Krishna conscious movement. The whole world is revolving under the bodily conception. Therefore, there must be devotees all over the world to deliver people from the false bodily conception and fully engage them in Krishna consciousness. So who else says we should be servant of the servant? Who else gives that? Is there any verses about being, yes? Who? Tamal Krishna Maharaj. His name of his book is Servant of the Servant. Okay, that's another example. Servant of the Servant. Who? Rupa Goswami. Okay. Gopi Bhartu Padakalmayor Das Das Amidas. Lord Chaitanya is actually his instruction. Yes, what did you say? King Kulishekhar. Okay. Who else? Prahlad Maharaj. Bali Maharaj. They all, this one, when Nrisimhadev asked Prahlad, what do you want? Let me be a servant of Narada Muni. Of course, then again, after that, he asked for his father's liberation. But actually, he wanted to be servant of the servant. So this is our philosophy. We are not direct servants of Krishna, but we will always, our nature is to serve the servants. Actually, I was hearing a class in Mayapur by Bhakti Vidipurna Maharaj. If I can remember it correctly, he was saying there's the internal energy and there's the marginal energy. And the internal energy is serving directly Krishna. And the marginal is serving the internal energy. So that's the way that we get our pleasure, by serving Radharani. and Radharani's servants. Yes, Bhatri?
Ritrasura.
Yes, Dasamidas. Ritrasura is also praying like that. So this is the meaning. So what does it mean, actually, practically speaking, what does it mean to be servant of the servant? What does it mean, philosophically speaking? If you look at it philosophically, according to the philosophy, yes.
It means serving the living entities means to distribute Krishna consciousness.
Distribute Krishna consciousness, okay. That's servant of the servant. You're serving all living entities by giving them Krishna consciousness.
Krishna is the friend, so giving them knowledge from the friend means he also becomes.
Okay. Krishna is the friend, so you give knowledge of the friend. Yes, that one time I asked Radhana Swami, I asked him a question. I said, he was saying about servant of the servant. And he was saying, he says, I'm not only servant of Prabhupada, but all the non-devotees, I'm also their servant. I said, how come you're their servant? He says, and they're all helping me in my service to Srila Prabhupada. Is all the non-devotees are helping me in my service to Srila Prabhupada. So how is that? I can understand, you know, when you serve Prabhupada, but how are these non-devotees helping you? He says, yes, when they accept prasadam, then that's pleasing to Prabhupada, so they're helping me in my service to Prabhupada. So that was a very nice realization. So another meaning of servant to servant, servant of the servant, Adipurush. Don't try to enjoy anybody. Okay? That's good. The idea, yes?
Help the mission of your Guru Maharaj.
What? Help the?
Help your
yes.
Guru Maharaj.
Help your Guru Maharaj mission. Yes. Actually, servant of the servant means, for me anyway, that you're connecting with Parampara. That the whole Parampara, there's all servants of Krishna. And then you serve the last servant in the Parampara. So you're servant of the servant of the servant all the way up to Lord Brahma. So in that way, if we serve the Parampara, then we're servant of the servant also. That's how I... Yes, Patri. Okay, to see, not to see others' bad qualities through the angle of your imperfection.
Through the angle of your perfection. Well, I'm so good at everybody.
Right. But you see others' good qualities. Okay.
Through
your own imperfections. Anybody try that? Through your own, I'm like this, the other must be really good. Okay, last verse. King Parikshit then told Shukadev Goswami, my dear Lord, O great devotee sage, you are omniscient. You have very nicely described the position of the conditioned soul who is compared to a merchant in the forest. From these instructions, intelligent men can understand that the senses of a person in the bodily conception are like rogues and thieves in that forest, and one's wife and children are like jackals and other ferocious animals. However, it is not very easy for the unintelligent to understand the purport of the story, because it is difficult to extricate the exact meaning from the allegory. I therefore request your holiness to give the direct meaning. So now, the next chapter, you're going to hear all these same points again. And there is one thing I would like to read at the end of this class. This is from Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And the title of it is Searching for the Lord, Searching for God. So we heard about all these bogus gurus, like cranes, herons, and vultures. So Bhakti Tirtha Swami describes his search through various false shelters, and then until he found the real shelter. I thought it was quite interesting, and the way he wrote it. Many people told me that there is a God. And if you look for him, you will find him. As a child, I looked for him in the sky, thinking one day he would come out of the clouds. But I could not find him. As I grew older, I began to look for him in Sunday school and Bible classes. My teacher told me if I was a good boy, God would bless me and I would meet him. I put on nice clothes and I went to church and Bible class, hoping, trying to be good like my teacher had requested. However, I noticed neither he nor I seem to have found God. Later they told me, if you really want to know God, you join the choir, be baptized, and give a weekly donation to the church. However, how happy I was to get better instructions. However, after doing these things, I noticed none of those who encouraged me in these ways actually seemed to have met God. So me, I used to go to church, joined the choir, did all these things. And then when I was 13 years old, I looked around at all the people, and I was thinking, they don't really believe this. They're just coming here to show their clothes and to talk about what they did in the last week. And then I said, okay, anyway, I think these people are not serious. I'm serious. I want to meet God, but these people are not. But I kept going anyway because they had basketball and volleyball and, you know, we need some exercise. So they have a gymnasium in the church. So I used to go there for that. But I didn't find God. So this is really... Then as I grew older, then this happened to me too, the association with my peers and the basis of my understanding became more variegated. My friends laughed at me and said, you really want to know God? You have to join another church. You'll find him in the mosque, one said. No, no, he's with the Baha'i. So he said, yes, I visited these centers often. I did not find God or others who had found him. After I went to college, my quest for God slowed considerably. Close friend, seeing my emptiness, told me, the problem is, you have the wrong conception. Only children and childish people think of God as a person. God is mind, energy. You'll find him in the metaphysical schools. So I also went through that too. I thought, well, maybe it's just like that. Maybe it's energy. Maybe it's not a person. I joined many of them. However, I found only people trying to psych each other out. I wondered, is thinking God could be discovered a symptom of some psychological disturbance? Am I mad that I'm trying to find God? One advanced friend told me one day, you know why you haven't found God? Because he is you. You are God. And he began to tell me how I was God. And he didn't stop there. He said, I'm God too. And everyone's God. That's why you can't find God. And he was completely serious. Then he told me as soon as he got over his headache, perhaps by tomorrow, he'd give me more explanation of how we are all God. So he said I was eager to get away from him, thinking he had more than a headache. So how could God suffer any illness? How could I, as God, have forgotten who I am? So I could appreciate neither he nor I were God, nor had we really found him. I was all ready to give up in my search when a female New Ager informed me the fastest and shortest way to find God was through the sublime union of male and female energies through perfect sexual exchange. It did not take me long to see that of all the pretenders, this was one of the greatest, for neither I nor she seemed to have the slightest idea of where to find God. All else had failed, and seemingly so had I. One close well-wisher tried to encourage me, explaining, the mystery of God consciousness is revealed through the proper drug experience. He explained, on reaching the proper altered state of consciousness, you could see God in his full splendor. As I was half mad by now, I thought the drug experience surely could do no harm. But to my disgust, I watched as my intoxicated friend began to feel and talk as if he were God, trying to describe what he was experiencing. He was not even aware he knocked all his drugs on the floor. I thought, why does God need to take drugs to know himself? If the drug gives him God consciousness, the drug is God, and it's more powerful than he. I realized both he and the drug were distractions, as surely neither could be God. So how many of us went through this? Of course, maybe not this generation, but our generation. We went through all these different stages, actually searching for God. How I had given up. I tried every technique. I could not find God, nor anyone who had found him. One day I met a pure devotee. I asked him, do you know God? He replied, who am I to know God? He says, I only know my spiritual master and the sadhus. My guru told me, always serve the devotee, study revealed scriptures scrutinizingly, and share with any and everyone the knowledge I have. He explained how he made these instructions his life and soul, and whenever he thinks of his guru and his instructions, his heart becomes overwhelmed with great love. He told me he personally does not feel he is qualified to meet the Lord, but he has given his life to serve the Lord's devotees. His sincerity brought tears to my eyes. I embraced him and noticed he was also in tears. He felt my desperation and wanting to know God, and I felt his great compassion. In a choked up voice, I said, let me serve the devotees with you. Let us penetrate. all coverings, diving deeper and deeper into higher consciousness, preparing ourselves to meet that glorious Lord. Today I have met a true devotee of my worshipful Lord. Now I can stop searching around and search within with a true partner. Only the Lord Himself could have sent me such a partner. Therefore, I'm sure He is arranging for me to meet Him soon, although I am a lowly beggar. So this was written 11 years ago by Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, in his first book, The Beggar. And he's written some quite interesting. I'm going to bring another one where he, about false ego, where his false ego decides to leave him one day, and all the problems that happen with that. So any questions or comments in today's class? Bhadi?
You said you had a couple of comments on verse 24.
24, comment by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Who? Shri Goswami calls Parikshit Maharaj.
O son of Mother Uttara.
Yes, O son of Mother Uttara, okay.
Shri Thakur explains that Parikshit Maharaj was a little bit depressed because he also committed an offense.
So Parikshit Maharaj was a little depressed because he also committed an offense.
By garlanding this snake.
To Samika Rishi, by garlanding him with a snake.
And Rahuganath, he got excused.
Rahugana got excused from his offense.
So therefore, he felt a little dejected.
So Parikshit was feeling dejected because he had committed an offense.
Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami reminds him, hey, you were protected from Brahma Tejas, from the Brahma power, already in the womb of your mother.
So Shukadeva is reminding him that you were already protected from Brahma Tejas in the womb of your mother, Uttara.
And now, the same Lord is showering you with the mercy of the Bhagavatam by sending Narada Muni, Nadi Rishis, and myself.
So now the same Lord is showering you with the mercy of Srimad Bhagavatam by sending Narada Muni and myself and other rishis.
So your good fortune will increase unlimitedly, so don't worry.
So your good fortune will increase unlimitedly, so don't worry. So Parikshit was worried because he had done Vaishnava Aparad. But Shukadeva was telling him, don't worry, you're hearing Bhagavatam and you're protected now. You've got the right shelter. Okay? That's Vishnu Chakravarti from the Sanskrit? Yes.
Also, it's interesting that neither Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur nor Jiva Sami nor Siddhar Sami nor in the Sanskrit it is mentioned that Jada Bharata was disturbed.
Oh.
Everywhere it says that.
Okay, so it's interesting to note that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, none of them mention the fact that Jada Bharata was disturbed.
So
it's only Prabhupada's addition here that Jada Bharata was disturbed. There were waves of dissatisfaction in his mind. But now he was peaceful. So Prabhupada does add things sometimes that are not in the other commentaries.
They just say that he was not disturbed by the waves, by any waves.
They just say he was not disturbed.
And Prabhupada expands it that there were waves.
Prabhupada expands it that there were waves, and he had been, there were some waves of dissatisfaction. Interesting. But then he neglected it, his heart again became calm and quiet, like an ocean. So here's an example of Prabhupada adding something from his own knowledge and realization that there were waves of dissatisfaction in the heart of Jada Bharata. Who else had some similar waves? Who was insulted?
Vidura,
yes, insulted by Duryodhan. There's like arrows piercing the heart. So he had some waves of dissatisfaction. But then he saw the good and he left home and he took up devotional service. Okay, any other comments? Yes, it's always for the good.
Maybe he just felt something of this there, not so pleasing, not that anything in the material world would be pleasing for him.
Right.
Good faith.
So Narada Muni, when he saw the Manigriva and Nalakuvera acting, misbehaving, then it made him agitated and he cursed them. He didn't like that, what they were doing. Any other comments, Damana Krishna?
Would it be the spiritual mind which was disturbed?
Your question is, was the spiritual mind disturbed? Is that your question? Oh, he was a liberated soul, so was it, he only had a spiritual mind, so was his spiritual mind disturbed? That's your question. The Prabhupada answers in the purport, actually, something. Madhavan Puri? Purnachandra Prabhu? Unspoken obstacles on the path of bhakti. He quotes this section here. Pure devotee may get angry. For higher purpose. Well, what Prabhupada says in the purport is that he got upset because of having a material body. His senses were agitated when he was insulted. It says because he had a material body. So liberated means he was jivan mukta. He was liberated within the material body. So he has a material, Jadabharat. Jadabharat was liberated, example of jivan mukta. So Prabhupada says he had a material body. But he was liberated. So what does it mean to have a material body and be liberated? Subtle body is there.
Spiritual body.
Yeah. Subtle body, the subtle body has disappeared. Okay, anything else? Yes. Servant of the servant. Okay, you have it on this topic or? Okay, Patri. Well, then we'll come. Who? Oh, you're speaking in Jivan Mukta. Okay. Oh, yes. Ihayasya Haridasya, is that what you said? Okay. Ihayasya Haridasya, Karmana Manasagira. Okay, so one who is always engaged in devotional service in all circumstances, he is considered liberated, higher than the highest Brahmin in society. Even Swapacha. Who says that? Prahlad Maharaj, Swapacha. Even, I think, Rishabde, Vidura Vigata. No, that was not Rishabde, that was the first chapter. Shukadev says that. Okay, so the body, how is it, but what would you, anyway, it's hard for me to imagine to be a liberated soul and have a material body. We've read that though, we read that in previous verses. We read about that. That it's, I can't remember the exact verse. Yes, Adi Purush.
So in the 14th chapter, it is given as a symptom of a liberated, someone who has transcended three worlds.
Which chapter? Bhagavad Gita. 14th chapter at the end, symptoms of someone who has transcended.
One who is not attached to illumination, desires, and delusion when they appear and doesn't hanker with them.
When they disappear.
And vice versa.
Mm-hmm. So we can study the 14th chapter to find the symptoms of a liberated soul, Jivan Mukta.
In other words, the three modes may still act upon the person, but why?
Another example is that you're on a boat and you're going to a destination. So the boat may be rocking and there may be so many storms, but if you stay in the boat of devotional service, then you're not. You keep going no matter what. Okay, well let's. Yes, Prabhu, you had something on servant of servant.
Yeah. I just want to tell
a
short story.
Maybe
92. In the temple, also I heard from temple president importance of serving devotees. He was emphasizing whole lecture.
So importance of serving your devotees.
Yeah, so
you decided to check up how it works.
Yeah, and I was pujari, so
make experiment.
Yeah.
Is it really true? What is really true?
So if I serve devotees, then Krishna will be merciful.
If you serve devotees, so he wanted to make an experiment. If you serve devotees, Krishna will be merciful to me.
So since I was pujari at that time,
and he was pujari,
I
took all the evening maha halwa.
And I chose him.
He chose the brahmachari who didn't expect anything from him.
So I just want
You just wanted to please this brahmachari who didn't expect anything from him.
So I brought all Mahaprasad, he was extremely happy.
So he brought the Mahaprasad to him, all of it, and he was extremely happy.
So he ate everything.
He ate everything.
It was evening. So next morning I didn't see him on Mangalarti.
Next morning you didn't see him at Mangalarti.
And then I thought, maybe it's not a big problem. So I did it second time, the second day again.
So you thought, well, maybe not a big problem. I'll try again. And second day you gave him all the maha halva.
Then I noticed that...
So spiritual life went down and he was chastised by the authorities. He's not following the morning program.
But he worked extremely happy.
So he was... The experiment seemed to be a failure. Although you were trying your best to please that devotee, you pleased his senses, but the result was not so pleasing.
So I went to our authority and asked him sincerely the personal question, what was wrong in my service to the devotee?
So you asked the authority, what did I do wrong in my service to this devotee?
Benefit for it.
So the authority said, if you want to serve that person, you should ask what is not pleasing to him, but what is the most beneficial thing.
Not really ask him, but...
Understand, analyze, what is the best thing. So if you do something that will increase his faith in his guru and his practice of sadhana, that will be real service.
But,
so you decide to analyze the spiritual life.
And I just gave the devotee a tape with the lecture of his guru. Which was inspiring.
So you gave him an inspiring lecture tape from his guru.
And I started to ask him, how is his japa going on, how is his reading?
We asked him, how is his japa, how is his reading?
And those questions.
He said, last 3 years in the temple, no one ever asked me those questions.
And he said, the morning when I hold on.
So the day that he asked him, how is your spiritual life? Was the day he had all his luggage packed and he was ready to, he went to see the deities to say goodbye. He was ready to leave the temple and go home and forget spiritual life.
4 days.
So when he asked him, how's your spiritual life? He decided to stay a few more days.
Because he, service.
So then he remained a devotee and some years later he came back and told all the details of how actually those words made him remain a devotee. So then you realize what is the best service to the devotee. So you understood there is a subtle distinction between what is when a devotee is externally satisfied with what we do or a devotee is internally satisfied with what we do for him. You understood to serve the devotees better, I have to practice better. I have to become a better devotee. Very good. Thank you for your story. Bhagwat, did you have something?
Question about
gurus. Gurus. Yes. Well, that's what Prabhupada said.
So
is that what they want? So that's a good question. So we're here in Bhagavatam, it's talking about cheating gurus. So her question is, well, what happens if you get an ISKCON guru who falls down? You feel like, is it because I wanted to be cheated? Or you're bogus? So is it the fault of the... So her question, your question is the fault of the disciple?
Well, I just want to know...
Or you want to know, well, why did you get this kind of guru? Why me?
Is it because of the fault of the disciple?
So your question is it the fault of the disciple that you get a guru who falls down? That's your question. Madhavendra Puri. Bhaktivedanta Purnima Maharaj explains that in our past life we cheated our guru. So now in this life we are being cheated. So that was his answer. Srimati also agrees.
She was an impersonalist guru before she joined.
Oh, Srimati was an impersonalist guru before she joined?
And then she got cheated twice.
Oh, she was a guru, impersonalist guru herself.
Yeah, and then when she joined...
Yeah, she was, before she became a devotee, she was a guru.
And two of her gurus fell down.
Interesting. Patri.
Prabhupada was giving an example.
Who?
Prabhupada.
Yeah.
Was eaten by ants.
Ants, yeah. I think that example is in Mahabharata or Ramayana, one of those books. There was a snake that was being eaten by ants. Its skin was coming off. It was really suffering a lot. Snake.
And then...
Yes. The story in Mahabharata was that the sage somebody pointed to the sage, "See that snake? It's being eaten alive by ants." And the sage laughed. That's why you're laughing. And because last life, this snake was a guru who cheated his disciples, so now they're getting back at him. So it's very, very difficult position. But anyway, that's the answer. I don't know what my answer would be. I would just say, whenever people come to me with these questions, and I try to see the good. I say, so where is your faith? What is your faith in? Where do you have faith? Now it's not in Guru, so what else is there to have faith in this movement? Guru must be there. It's very, very important. But now our faith is shaken, our faith is broken. So where do we go for shelter? Yes? ISKCON is not a Diksha line. Okay, Gaudiya Vaishnava Visit. This is one answer, Shiksha. So who is better, the question, one who is the disciple of Srila Prabhupada who doesn't follow, or one who is in ISKCON who has a guru and is following perfectly? A guru has fallen down. Who is better off? That's a good question. I'm not going to answer that one. Yes? Gargovinda Maharaj. Now we will hear from Gargovinda Maharaj.
So he asked, where is Prabhupada's disciples nowadays?
Because where is Prabhupada's disciples nowadays?
They
have left ISKCON. And he says they were never Prabhupada's disciples.
Yeah, because
they were Prabhupada's disciples. Prabhupada actually predicted that when we couldn't believe it. He says 90% of you will leave at one point. He says 90%. We'll leave after I leave. Yes, Maharaj. Radha Damodar Party, 80-90% of my disciples will not be able to follow. We also heard something like they'll go to the heavenly planets.
Yeah, right.
Heavenly planets.
They will drift off.
Tamala Krishna Maharaj said he heard Prabhupada personally say this, that 80-90% of his disciples will go away and go to the heavenly planets and enjoy for a while. So, let's look at the 10% that are left. That's where we should look. We should put our eyes. We don't want to follow the 80-90% ones. Okay, he was first. Guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Oh yeah, Bipin something? Bipin Bihari? Even at time of Lord Chaitanya, there were examples of gurus falling down. Okay, so that's why they wrote a book or something saying what happens when your guru falls down, or how do you know what are the symptoms of a fallen guru. Prabhupada did talk about it sometimes in his lectures, very rarely, but there was one lecture I remember that he was saying these are the symptoms. And I think he quotes from Nectar of Devotion, there are symptoms, right, of gurus who are not qualified, unqualified gurus. Unqualified. Okay, last.
Body.
Leaving his body, right.
Karma Muni or Kapila Dev, in the story of Kapila Dev, how they.
The yogis.
Gradually.
Yeah. But this is the path of the yogis.
So is it in the beginning?
In the beginning. You're going to lose your subtle body.
Even as the gross.
You have your gross body and your subtle body's gone. So is this how it happens? When you become Jivan Mukta, you've got your shell and your subtle body is gone. So what's left? What's inside?
Spiritual body.
Okay.
But is this like in a...
Prabhupada says when you chant Hare Krishna and when you take Diksha and when you take instructions of the spiritual master, then your subtle body automatically dissolves. It changes. So if there's no subtle body, how is he... Well, Prabhupada said he had some material body still there.
No,
the shell is there.
Yes.
Shell is still there. There's something is still there that he's feeling. So when you become Jivan Mukta, you'll find out. Yes, it goes automatically. We don't have to try. Right. Right, automatically. There is a verse, Madhavendra Puri, yes? Give us the verse. 3 25:31. Look it up.
Bhakti
dissolves the subtle body just as the stomach digests food. That is quoted in Nectar Devotion, right? That bhakti dissolves the subtle body automatically. Okay, so we'll be looking forward to that state, that stage of when our sudden, hopefully there will be some spiritual body to take its place. Otherwise, what happens if you just have your gross body and no subtle body? It's quite, then some, anyway, we won't talk about that. I'll go ahead and share Prabhupada.